When President Trump and Vice President Vance were candidates in 2024, they made Springfield a focus with unsubstantiated comments about Haitian immigrants there. Months of turmoil followed. Now some of those families are facing separation, with children of Haitian immigrants looking for help because their parents are no longer in the U.S. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss what's happening in Springfield and how the community is responding are Springfield St. Vincent de Paul Executive Director Casey Rollins. Thanks for being here, Casey.
Thanks for having me, Lucy.
And Washington correspondent for the 19th, Amanda Becker. Welcome back, Amanda.
Always great to be here.
Casey, what are you seeing in Springfield in terms of children being separated from their parents because of deportations?
Well, we're just seeing the beginnings of this. We are having young families that are separated from their parents who at this time are with extended family members and who are now seeing the need to, as we've been doing for some time now, get passports for their children. They are American citizens. And so we've been doing this for several months now, for many months. But they're concerned about, family members are concerned, what happens to the children? Will they be dependency cases left here permanently? Will they need to go with extended family members when those extended family members are also subject to deportation down the road? It's all very unclear. So we're just trying to do whatever we can to help them with family planning.
So do you have children sometimes just show up at St. Vincent de Paul there in Springfield?
Well, never without extended family. We've mm-hmm. not seen anybody, children that have come without adults that were, you know, some form of legal custodian on some level. Yeah. We haven't had anybody looked in by themselves yet. And so fortunately for us, we haven't run into that yet, just yet.
Yeah. When did you start seeing this, Casey?
Well, some weeks back, we started seeing this. We had a town hall for Christmas, and we noticed within 1 week we had two separate families that there were 9 children collectively that were affected by families, parents who had been picked up for whatever reason. We aren't privy to those reasons necessarily. And fortunately for them, they did have extended family who did have some parental custodial rights with them. So we didn't have to directly get the courts involved or anything, or the authorities. That part was at least taken care of. But then that family, those family members had to step up and get their legal matters in order, which is where we came in terms of trying to help them with that.
Yeah. Amanda, remind us how big the Haitian immigrant population is in Springfield and what has drawn so many families there.
Yeah, so it's actually hard to put an exact number on it. It always has been, and now it's getting more difficult because people are leaving. People are going to other cities where maybe they feel more anonymous. But recent years, the estimate was between 10 and 15,000 immigrants overall, many of those Haitians. Now, the way they keep the records, you know, it's hard to tell country of origin and things like that. But, you know, we're talking about a city of about 60,000. That's about the size of Springfield. So we're talking about a significant proportion of people living in that area are Haitian migrants. Overall, there's about 330,000 Haitians in this country on temporary protected status, which is what is ending on February 3rd. There's various statuses. There's also humanitarian parole and asylum. You know, certainly some Haitian immigrants are on those other statuses, but a lot are on TPS. So they're facing this February 3rd deadline.
You mentioned that, these families have been living in Springfield legally with temporary protected status. Can you back up and talk about how they became such a focus in the 2024 presidential campaign?
Yeah, so a lot of these workers, families, immigrants, started out in other states. You know, some of them came up from Florida. They actually were recruited by staffing agencies and everything to come fill jobs that were available in Springfield that weren't being filled by local workers. And so they started arriving there in various waves. One was kind of the second year of the COVID-19 pandemic, so around 2021. And this all came to a head for several reasons. First of all, like many places in the country, there was a housing crunch in Springfield. There still is. People were struggling economically during the COVID-19 pandemic. So this all started with kind of some animosity of, are they getting things that we should be getting? The current administration, when they were running for re-election, kind of seized on that idea and started talking about the Haitian immigrants in this way, and then started spreading, of course, the unproven statements that they were, you know, eating cats and dogs and people's pets up in Springfield. And we all kind of know how that played out.
Yeah. Casey, what kind of assistance has St. Vincent de Paul in Springfield been providing for these families even before this separation, these separations started?
So actually, starting really toward the end of 2016, early 2017, we were seeing immigrants come to us for basic things like interpretation. They would come to us just to shop. We have a thrift store. And what we didn't understand the language at all. We didn't really understand how they came to know us. We later found out that St. Vincent de Paul is big in Haiti. We just welcomed them like we would anyone. And they were wonderful folks to encounter and to get to know. So they would help us help them. Anyway, they would come purchasing furniture, purchasing whatever they needed to get started in their new home. They wanted to learn the language. They would help us to do the interpretation with, you know, with us and among us. And so when I say that, there were some people that spoke part English, part Haitian, and so they would help us to interpret with other people that didn't speak Haitian. And so we developed sort of a network here. We developed Haitian friends who would come and interpret for us. And then throughout time, we got our own interpreters because we saw the need was so great in the town. And this was, like I said, back in 2017, really, when it got big for us. Before COVID. And we started sort of interpretive services. Then they started asking us for help with jobs, which we had no jobs. We would help them connect with other community liaisons and things like that. And we would work with United Way and we worked with the health department and we just started building our own network in the town. Because that's what St. Vincent de Paul does. And this is a town that is renowned for doing that anyway. That's just what we do. And we had been doing that anyway because of COVID. Through COVID, we all learned we had to work together to care for each other in every way, you know, necessary. So so interpretation, jobs, it would come into St. Vincent asking to apply for different things, you know, online, things like that. They didn't need the basic things that we were accustomed to with the American folks. You know, we at that time we did rent utilities assistance, but that was something that patients didn't need yet. And they didn't know they were entitled to or accustomed to it anyway. It just wasn't an issue yet. Yeah. Now, as things have evolved, we're now seeing the need to help with rent assistance, utilities assistance, food assistance, all kinds of things, because the folks are now losing their jobs and they're now losing, you know, food subsidies, things like that, that all Americans are also losing. Mm. So we're helping with all manner of things now, yeah, Haitians as well as Americans.
Well, we're talking about what happens when a parent gets deported and what Haitian immigrant families are facing in Springfield. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Casey, you talked about kind of how that assistance for these Haitian immigrant families has evolved over time. When did you start to worry that children of these Haitian immigrants would start showing up at St. Vincent de Paul in Springfield without their parents, you know, with other legal guardians, but without their parents?
I would say maybe 8 or 9 months ago, we started concerning ourselves with this when we heard more about the potential for deportation and the TPS deadlines, humanitarian parole, the end of humanitarian parole back in, I want to say March, when we started hearing more about these things. And I started worrying, also at GAL, ACASA, and ACASA, court-appointed special advocate with dependency cases. And it just started appearing to me that, you know, we have all these children being born here in America. What was going to happen if the parents were to go? And so we started, you know, we were seeing so many children here coming in with the folks as they would apply for other things. They would be applying for work permits. They would be applying for, you know, other types of USCIS needs they had to have. We would do that with our navigators here, community navigators here. We have four navigators here employed to assist them with that paperwork. We've done that for a few years now. Mm-hmm. We're also bringing in ABLE Law to do legal clinics 3 or 4 times a month. And that way we didn't do any legal work with them, but we would bring in the legal professionals to do that for us. For the folks. And so through that, we were just seeing so many babies and the handwriting was on the wall. So as we traditionally do with Americans, we do a lot of birth certificates here. And so we started thinking, you know what, it's really time to start thinking about the fact that these are American citizens. They probably are going to need passports, because if these children cannot, are they going to be able to stay here as dependency cases and really be orphaned by parents who are deported? Mm-hmm. I started talking to children's services friends here in judges and whatnot in the courts in our local area. And I said, what are we going to do? And we have 17 foster families in Springfield, Ohio that we know of. How are we going to handle this dependency crisis? And so, you know, not to be henny-penny here, but it's something we have to think about. Yeah. So we brought Job and Family Services in, and they said, well, we can't do anything until that actually becomes the reality, other than talk to people about what happens if, what happens when. So let's talk to them about family planning, yeah. You know, get a family plan together for your children in case you are deported. If you are deported, you have a plan, which would include getting a passport for them, so that either one, they can travel with you, or two, they can go with a family member, or they can stay here, or they can, you know, do whatever has to be done. So we started raising funds, we started raising awareness, and it just came into play about 6 months ago.
Well, we will talk more about all of this after a short break. And later in the program, refugee children embrace the power of their own stories. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about what happens to children when their parents get deported. My guests are Springfield St. Vincent de Paul Executive Director Casey Rollins and Washington Correspondent for the 19th, Amanda Becker. You can join the conversation. Call 513-419-7100 or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Before we took a break, Amanda, Casey was talking about all the different ways that St. Vincent de Paul has tried to prepare families, the different community resources that have come together. Just generally, what legal options do parents have, Amanda, when it comes to identifying somebody to take care of their children if they're deported?
Yeah, so starting at kind of like the most basic level, this is going to require, first of all, attorneys who have some familiarity with two different court systems, the family court system and the immigration court system. And then there's different sets of children. You know, we have a lot of citizen children. More than 1,300 children were born in Clark County, which houses Springfield, just in the past few years alone. And that is just part of the citizen children who are living in that area. Then you have children who were born in Haiti and came here with their parents who have their own immigration cases to contend with. And then you have a third group that might have been born in a third country along the way. A lot of these families came up on land through the Darien Gap that connects North and South America, a harrowing journey, and they might be essentially stateless right now. So you're having to do kind of work in two different court systems. And many states, including Ohio, from the attorneys I've spoken to, have a type of guardianship that is triggered by an emergency event. So say a health crisis, or someone's going in for treatment, someone has been sentenced and they're going to jail or prison. And that could also apply in cases of deportation or detainment by immigration officials. They will need to have the paperwork in place. So when that event happens, it triggers the guardianship. Because of course, very few parents are going to want to give up guardianship of their children while they're still here and able to parent. But they will need that for even the most basic things. Once they are deported or detained, children are going to need a legal guardian to enroll in school, to go to the doctor. You know, these are very day-to-day things that make up families' lives that they're going to need to have a legal guardian in place for.
Casey, how are parents responding to this information? Are they eager to get this paperwork in place? Are they kind of horrified by the need to? How are they responding to this?
They're in denial. They're in absolute denial. It's very, very, very hard. We've worked for months and months to try to get families, thinking along these lines, and it just really hasn't happened. And I think we worked with the family plans for months. We had a group called Springfield Neighbors United that has worked tirelessly going out into different Haitian and Hispanic grocery stores all over town, doing what we call tabling, talking to families endlessly, trying to get them to consider these family plans for powers of attorney, and all kinds of emergency packets and planning. And we literally have printed everything out, gotten everything ready for them, and just, you know, almost no avail and no success. So we said, we just are getting nowhere. So at the very least, can we at least get passports for these kids? So we really started revving that program up, saying at the very least, let's get them ready to have this plan to travel. And even then, a lot of times the parents are just saying, we just want them recognized as American citizens. And we were like, okay, we do too. We really want them to have this in case they have to go somewhere with someone. So even their idea of why the passport is essential is a little bit different than our idea of why the passport is essential. We're all protective in our need to get the passports for the children, but it's just a little different, I think. So we still see the denial with this at the time. I wouldn't want to give my children over, would you? I mean, who would want to do this?
Right.
So there's a huge learning curve in this, and I don't know how successful or how soon any of that will be successful. So we just keep plugging away with the passports. And when people get them, they say, and we're doing several of a day of these, even though we need hundreds completed a day, we're doing several a day here. They're just so happy that their children are recognized as American citizens.
Amanda, you referenced this earlier in our conversation, but can you explain a little bit more about this February deadline that these Haitian immigrants are facing?
Yeah, so this was the deadline that was set back during the Biden administration. And this has been the subject of court challenges over the past year because the Trump administration tried to end it early. And that, according to people I talked to up in Springfield who are working with this population of immigrants, is contributing kind of to this denial or this, oh, well, the deadline has been moved so many other times and there's been kind of these last minute reprieves that surely that will happen this time as well. And so TPS is a country-specific immigration designation where people are coming from countries that have had major natural disasters, that have war, that have fallen under kind of rebel or control or have had coups, Haiti, you know, has markers of most of those. You know, they had an awful earthquake. It was 2010 or 2011. That kind of necessitated the need for the program to begin with. But now, you know, there's a lot of political violence. Their systems have crumbled. There's gangs in the major cities. And so, you know, attorneys have tried to make the case that this is not the time to end TPS. You know, where, how will they go back to this? Because for a lot of these people, they really think that they will die if they go back to Haiti. And the last thing they want to do is expose their children to that. But TPS is ending now on February 3rd. It ends at 11:59 p.m. I checked kind of what time it actually happens. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the deadline that people are facing. And after that, technically, they, you know, unless they obtain some other status or pathway, they won't be in the country legally anymore.
Casey, are you seeing people leave voluntarily because of that deadline coming up, or making plans to leave, you know, by the end of this month or in very early February with that deadline coming up?
I am not. I am hearing that, you know, the streets seem lighter. We don't see the people, in, you know, walking up and down the streets. I'm hearing that, but I'm not seeing it. I'm still seeing a busy St. Vincent de Paul. I'm still seeing, you know, lots of neighbors at the store. You know, I had someone come today and she said, we're just not seeing the people at the doctor's office. We're just not. And I said, well, I don't know about you, but I'm still seeing the people. Mm. And so I don't know. I think a lot of people are staying home. I think we're still in serious denial. I think the people just believe it's not going to happen.
Casey, immigration is such a divisive issue in this country. There are lots of people in favor of what the Trump administration is doing. There are lots of people opposed to what the administration is doing. How do you think about the politics of all this?
So I've always tried to steer clear of the politics and just worry about the humanity. And, you know, it's gotten impossible to do. Excuse me. Because, you know, people are at the core of this entire issue. And, you know, I guess I look at this and I think, always the children are the pawns in everything that every decision that is made here. And I see no one going back there safely. And so I don't want to see them forced to go back. Mm-hmm. And I don't have any say in the policy. So all I can do is remain part of the relief effort here. Clearly, I'm not a politician, and I can't be a politician, but I can continue to be a relief effort here. And I will continue. And I've spoken to lots of politicians. I don't go to them. They come to us. And I spoke to the governor just last week, and I said, should we continue this? And he said, you need to continue to be there in service like you always are. And that's what we will continue to do. We will continue to try to stay out of what these folks are, what I consider to be games with people's lives. But we'll just be here to care for people, regardless.
Casey, we only have about a minute left, but how do you think about the future and what the Springfield community will need next?
Well, I think we have lots of children whose lives are at stake. And I think my focus has to be laser focused on that. And I know that there's going to be some challenges ahead, some real rough reactive tendencies on the part of people who are politically motivated with this. And I'm going to hope that our organization, the organizations that have supported the people, have supported our ministry to just serve people and not serve politics, we will continue to care for those needs. The humanitarian piece here, know that children are at the heart of the hope of all that we do, and know that we'll continue to move forward with the needs of these children, wherever they are, wherever they go, and whatever they need. I don't know how else to look forward other than that.
That seems to say it all. I've been talking with Springfield St. Vincent de Paul Executive Director Casey Rollins and Washington Correspondent for the 19th, Amanda Becker. Thank you both so much for your time today and for this important conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Take care.
You too. Up next, refugee children embracing the power of their own stories. This is Cincinnati Edition.